You are listening to the Tuesday, September 19th edition of RotoViz Radio. I'm your host, Pat Corain, on Twitter, at Pat Corain. And with me this week is Sean Siegel, writer and editor for RotoViz, and coming on as the new co-host for this show. Sean, great to have you on.
Yeah, it's great to be here, and I look forward to this season. We're going to have a lot of fun and have a bunch of great guests and talk a lot of football here. So a couple weeks playing now and a lot of very exciting things and some sort of strange and disappointing things. So we'll get to a lot of that.
Yeah. And if you've missed a couple episodes and you're kind of unclear what happened to Jake Rickrode, he had his third kid and he's super busy right now. So he's taking some time off from the show. We're hoping to get him back on from time to time, but Sean's going to be co-hosting with me going forward. And yeah, for this episode, we're just going to get into kind of all the craziness from the first 2 weeks, as you mentioned, Sean. So it'll just be you and me and kind of talking about football so far. So basically having you on is kind of a combo co-host and guest this week. So I'm excited for that. I want to remind everyone, though, before we get into everything, that, you should still be signed up for RotoViz if you haven't already. You can get a listeners only 30% discount to RotoViz, the RotoViz NFL Pass through our NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast, which is going to give you unlimited access to all of our premium content. Also supports a podcast. And it also helps if you rate and review the podcast on iTunes. And of course, subscribe as well. And then you can always contact us as well via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com and Twitter at rotovizradio. Sean, the RotoViz does not go dormant during the season. Isn't that right?
Right. We've got some of the best content we've ever had this season. Probably 30, 40 in-season articles a week. And covering just a variety of different angles. We have a great waiver wire report, but then Ben Crutch is doing a couple of spectacular articles each week called Stealing Signals, which give more stats than you can imagine on every single team, so much that you have to split it up, one column for AFC, one column for NFC, and then we've got, 2-0 running back reports, again, the same thing, so much information. We cover both conferences separately. We've got the game level similarity projections. We've got a ton of DFS stuff late in the week, obviously with Nick, who does a fantastic job with that, and then his team there. I'm just really excited about what the content has looked like for the first week.
Awesome. So let's get into our first topic here, which I kind of want to talk about some RotoViz wide receivers, guys that we are all pretty much high on going into the season. It's been kind of up and down for three of these guys that I wanted to highlight. Let's start with Amari Cooper. He had a good week one, not such a good week two. 13 targets in week one. He was 5 for 62 and a touchdown. Probably should have had another touchdown. He got 3 straight targets in the red zone in week one. In the end zone, I should say, in week one. In week one, Crabtree had 7 targets to Cooper's 13. But this week, Cooper saw 5 targets. Crabtree had 6. And, of course, Crabtree had 3 touchdowns, while Cooper just had 4 receptions for 33 yards. What do you make of Cooper's start to the season? How worried are you about Crabtree kind of reemerging as that red zone touchdown weapon that he was last year?
I thought the first week was extremely encouraging, especially those end zone targets. One of the things that we've heard through two seasons for Cooper is that they just don't use him in the red zone. And obviously, there was plenty of evidence to back that up. Someone who has the profile that Cooper has, having been a spectacular college wide receiver, a very good athlete, then coming out and immediately emerging through his first two seasons, the idea that he would not be deployed or not be used in the red zone, certainly in the end zone, that didn't make a lot of sense, because you don't refuse to use great weapons in the most important area. And so then he scores, next drive goes down there, but that's a good and bad kind of situation, because as you mentioned, on those 3 plays, none of them were easy, but 2 of them certainly could have been described as drops. The third one was a difficult catch that he didn't make. And when you have, you know, a player where you have heavy ownership and they essentially miss three consecutive shots at a touchdown, not only does that hurt your fantasy team, but then you, in the back of your mind, you start to wonder, you know, if that's also going to affect how the team sees him. He had another drop later in that game. He had a pretty big drop on what would have been a conversion early on in week two. And then obviously you see the Crabtree explosion. And a little bit of that is always just going to be that Derek Carr has shown that he is willing to take whatever the matchup is. And so, you know, with Amari Cooper being so difficult to cover, defenses are going to have to look to take that away. And when they do, then, you know, he just targets Crabtree relentlessly. At the same time, if he's having so much success with Crabtree, and, you know, the quarterback in the back of his mind too, you know, he sees those drops on big plays, and that can't help but push you away from that. I mean, certainly we've seen lots of players in the past. You're reminded last night when Brandon Marshall just had, you know, big drop after big drop. Well, I mean, Marshall has had a ton of drops throughout his career, but he's someone who gets open at will. You know, Terrell Owens, someone else who, you know, a ton of drops, but those guys are always open. And so, you know, being open tends to swamp in the short term some of those drop issues, as long as you get the volume. And so you're hoping that Cooper, number one, that those drops are sort of fluky, but number two, you know, he's so difficult to cover that he still ends up with a lot of volume. When the volume gets a little bit lower, a little bit like we've seen with Marshall through a couple of weeks, I mean, those drops become really big. And certainly when the quarterback has other options, then I think he goes in that direction. So I'm still pretty high on Cooper. I have him on a huge number of teams. I think this could be his breakout season, but you know, both for the fantasy teams in week two and then for the long term, I mean, it was a pretty demoralizing week. I know you have him on one of your big teams. How do you see that week within the lens of, you know, both fantasy and then going forward?
Yeah, I'm really high on Cooper as well. And Pete Overzet and I drafted him in our FFPC high stakes team, which is not going well through 2 weeks. But I think the thing that this still makes me optimistic is looking at the snap counts. And in the back half of the show, we're going to be getting into some kind of interesting tidbits from the snap counts through 2 weeks, one per each team. And the tidbit I'll kind of rob from that section for the Raiders that I found was that Crabtree still trails through 2 weeks Amari Cooper by 26 snaps. Crabtree's played on 67% of the Raiders' snaps compared to 89% for Cooper. And even this past week, Crabtree played on 61%. Cooper played on 84%. Cooper was on the field for 13 more snaps than Michael Crabtree. So I still feel like long term the volume should tilt in Cooper's favor. I think given his profile and kind of what we saw week one in terms of the volume, still has me optimistic. But let's move on to another kind of classic Rotovis wide receiver, and probably the wide receiver I think about is kind of being tied to you the most at this point, Sean, Stephon Diggs. He also had an excellent week one, 8 targets, 7 receptions, 93 yards, and 2 touchdowns. This week fell back to earth with 6 targets, but 2 for 27 and no touchdowns. Meanwhile, Adam Thielen has been, I think, much more high volume than at least I expected he would be. He had 10 targets in week one, went 9 for 157, and then he had 6 targets this past week, going 5 for 54. So he's actually out-targeted Diggs through 2 weeks. And then, of course, there's concerns if Sam Bradford misses time. I'm not too worried about Diggs 2 for 27 in terms of what it says about Diggs, but I do worry about what it says about what he can do if Bradford's out of the lineup and he has to play with Case Keenum. So what do you make of Diggs' first 2 weeks, and how do you see this moving forward, particularly if Bradford's banged up?
Yeah, Diggs is just unbelievable. You know, you watch him play, and he really looks like an Antonio Brown type of player. And then the question becomes, is the quarterback play strong enough to support that? Because obviously with Antonio Brown, we see any time that Ben Roethlisberger goes out, you know, that can't help but ding his numbers. And, you know, we've seen the same thing with Diggs, whether he's injured like he was in the back half of last season or this last week with Bradford. I think he's going to have an incredible year. Obviously, you're not going to have that week one every week, but he's just completely and totally uncoverable. And he shows up in there in terms of the kinds of things that you're looking for a prospect. It's interesting when we put together the article that did really well yesterday about Rashard Higgins. You know, Higgins has that same sort of profile where you've got, you know, this early and explosive production in college. Anytime you pull out the box score scout and you bring up the receivers like that, it's just really interesting because Antonio Brown and Stephon Diggs are always the ones that pop in there. So you're like, these guys who have this profile of being a little bit smaller, drafted later, not necessarily expected to get an NFL opportunity, but then if they do get an NFL opportunity, the sky appears to be the limit. So, you know, excitement for several of those guys. I'm looking forward to watching the week two. Every week I tape all the games and do 6 miles on the treadmill on Sundays, watching almost all of them, mostly so that later in the day, you know, I can have my tacos and donuts and that kind of thing and only be at like plus 500 calories instead of, you know, plus 1,000 or something like that. This week I haven't seen the Vikings game yet, in part because that Bradford news comes out Sunday morning and you're like, ah, you know, looking for ways to move your lineups around, and then, you know, you can't help but see the bottom line, and when Diggs doesn't score, that doesn't create a lot of incentive to go to that game first. So I haven't seen Vikings this week yet. Looking forward to that game and just looking at what Keenum has to offer there. Certainly anytime you haven't had as much of a heads up on that kind of thing, I think it destroys sort of the whole offense. You don't get as much time to work with the things that maybe Keenum does well, to practice those kinds of things. And certainly the Pittsburgh defense is a very difficult matchup. So hopefully this will just be a one-week blip, and we'll see both Diggs and Thielen do better. Thielen, in his own right, is a very talented player. Josh Hermsmeyer's air yards projection system had him as a huge value this year. So in constructing my lineups, I tried to make sure I got either Diggs or Thielen on basically every team, and I think that will work out going forward, those guys both outperforming their draft slots.
Do you think this is a buy low opportunity for Diggs and maybe also for Thielen, given that they both, you know, had much less production in week two? And, you know, if you weren't the type of person to really be buying Diggs in the first place, then you might see, you know, this is actually a chance to get out before the bottom falls out.
I think that possibility exists. Certainly the expectations for Diggs are all over the map. I drafted a couple of expert leagues with Matt Harmon, who would often take him in early in round three. And so, you know, you're not going to be able to buy there.
Right.
You know, even if you're a huge Diggs fan, difficult to even get it. On the other hand, I participated in the Washington Post mock and actually let Diggs go a couple times just to see how late he would go, and he fell to 5'11". That's around where he was going in some of the high-stakes drafts as well, which is one of the reasons why I got him on almost every team, because I would never really let him go past round four. I think if you're in a situation where he's going round three, going round four, then probably, you know, the owner is excited enough and understands that he's just really undervalued. I mean, I think Stephon Diggs is a second-round value. And so anywhere after round two, which is basically where anybody got him, then I think you're already looking at extra value there. Certainly, if someone is worried about Bradford, I think the best opportunities in some of these situations are to attempt two-for-two trades, maybe a two-for-two trade in a dynasty league where you can sort of camouflage the fact that Diggs is your target through who the secondary players involved are. But yeah, I mean, certainly any chance, anytime Diggs has a bad game, you should be putting out offers for him, because, you know, I think he's going to be a round one draft pick in 2018.
Awesome. And then one last wide receiver here I wanted to cover, Kenny Britt. He was a big Rotovis guy as well. He's currently wide receiver 109 in PPR, so rough start to the season. In week one, he had 3 targets, but just went 1 for 13. Week two, he was down to 2 targets. Had 1 for 2 yards, if I wrote that down right. So that is obviously a terrible start to the season, but Corey Coleman is likely to land on IR with a broken hand. So there could be some hope for Britt to rebound here. How optimistic are you about Britt?
Well, Britt was one of our guys for a long time, and then he had the very strong season last year where he had a number of peripherals strongly in his favor beyond the raw numbers. When he was targeted, Jared Goff had, 2 yards per attempt in terms of adjusted yards per attempt better than any other receiver. He had these good peripheral numbers in terms of converting air yards into actual receiving yards, even though he was getting some deep targets that are often difficult to convert. So there are a lot of positives there. At the same time, I think that you have to be responsive to the new information that you get. And certainly he has not looked good in this offense. And I think there are a variety of potential factors there. Certainly we've seen a number of high profile receivers have a bad game here, a bad game there. I mean, you look at someone like Marvin Jones, if he doesn't come down with those 2 touchdowns, then he basically hasn't scored at all through 2 weeks. So having 2 bad weeks doesn't immediately count you out, but anytime you're a veteran receiver changing teams to a situation where the quarterback play is probably not very strong, then if your production also isn't there, your targets aren't there, I don't know that there's a great argument for an immediate bounce back or a bounce back to a level where he'd really be playable. I mean, I think his performance, his numbers are going to be better than they have been, but better than they have been, it could still fall far short of what you need for your fantasy leagues. He's certainly a compelling hold if you're in a league where you've lost a number of receivers and maybe you're in a start 4 situation. With many people being in a start 2 or start 3 situation with wide receivers, I don't think that he's probably as strong a hold as other people you could have on your team, especially when people are always trying to churn running backs. And then this last week we saw a number of tight ends go down. So even in the leagues that I have where you have 20 roster spots and you potentially will start 4 wide receivers, he is someone who would perhaps be on the chopping block for me or is in the waivers to where if I can pick up someone else who has better opportunity, he would be someone who in that case would be released. Tell me you've got a more optimistic look. I'm looking for Kenny Britt optimists here as we're sitting 2 weeks in and he has no production.
Yeah, so I guess the optimistic little nugget is that he does lead all Browns wide receivers in snaps through 2 weeks. So he is on the field despite the fact that he's not producing. I know kind of the narrative on him a little bit has been that he's been in the doghouse with Hugh Jackson, but he's been out there. So with Coleman gone, I don't think there's real risk of Coleman being gone and then like someone else being a huge beneficiary where Britt's still not playing that much. Like, he is playing, I guess, is the best I can say. And so therefore he's out on the field. They just lost Coleman. He should get more targets, but I kind of agree with your point where, yeah, he could double his targets and he'd have 10 targets over the next 2 games. He'd be averaging 5 targets per game. So I'm kind of in our high stakes team. We drafted him in the 10th round. And I think we'll probably throw him back actually and see if we can get another running back kind of waiver wire target. But I guess what I say is like I wouldn't just drop him outright in that league, 20 roster spots, but if we can get a running back target that we like, I think he's probably our cut this week. So Sean, before we get to our next section, which is going to be 0 running back candidates, I kind of want to pick your brain about, what you said, we're going to try to churn for running backs, who we should be targeting. Before we do that, though, I want to just mention my bookie, which, if you're into fantasy, that means you're into football. So if you're going to be putting some money on the games as well, then The place to do it is MyBookie. The number one reason to play with MyBookie is that they actually pay you out. But the other biggest reason is that if you deposit with MyBookie, they'll match your deposit up to 100%. All you have to do is use the promo code ROTORADIO to activate your offer. That's mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid at mybookie.ag. And the really cool little promo here right now that we have with MyBookie is that if you sign up using the code ROTORADIO at mybookie.ag, and then you forward a copy of your sign-up to rotovizradio@gmail.com, you're going to be entered into a drawing for a limited edition Rotoviz athletic jacket. We covered last week, these are going to be kind of like half-zip pullovers. Sean, have we figured out what color they're going to be yet?
I don't know who is winning the vote. I think that red with the white lettering may be out in front, but...
What did you vote for?
I voted for the red with the white lettering, so we'll see there. I already have a lot of the gray Rotoviz and otherwise sweatshirts and pullovers, so just for a little variety there and a little pop. You know, when you're walking around out on the street and someone sees you in your Rotoviz pullover, I mean, you want them to know Rotoviz. Like, that guy cannot beat my fantasy league.
that's true. The other options, I think, were gray with the white lettering and gray with red lettering. So no doubt that the red pops the most. So it looks like that's going to be what you'll win here if you sign up for MyBookie. So make sure when you sign up in mybookie.ag that you use the promo code ROTORADIO, forward us the confirmation email, and then you'll be in the drawing to win the limited edition Rotoviz athletic jacket. And these things are big. I mean, I actually screwed up the order last year on the Rotoviz hoodies, so I didn't get my black Rotoviz hoodie. I've just got the gray and the red from the 2 years previous, and I'm really bummed about that. So don't miss out here. Get in on these hoodies. Get in on the our very first pullover, half zip pullover from Rotoviz. Kind of a cool little promo here. So let's get into our zero running back pickups, targets, what have you. I just wanted to bring up some names with you, Sean, that I think are on the forefront of most people's minds. But I think what I really want to do is have you kind of fill in the gaps here, anyone I don't mention. So I'll just kind of run through some guys that are kind of popular pickups. I mean, Javorius Allen, if he's still out there, is going to be a huge pickup this week. Obviously, he's producing, and then Terrence West is banged up. Chris Carson, also going to be a big pickup this week. But I'm also curious what you think about CJ Procise, given that situation. He was a big zero running back target before the season. And then Samaje Perine and Chris Thompson should be getting some more work with Rob Kelly day-to-day with a chest injury. And then there's some deeper guys we'll get into later. But I'm curious about what you think about those guys, and then any other names that have really jumped out to you this week that you're kind of trying to add to the end of your rosters and your running back rosters.
Yeah, Allen has been fantastic. And he's a little bit difficult player to read because he was so involved in 2015, and he brings that sort of dual threat to the table. When we talk about the zero running back candidates and how to approach, you know, sort of setting your roster up structurally, you know, looking at players who, if things break the right way, they could have a much bigger workload. And so you're looking at players like Allen, where, you know, he may not be quite the rusher that West is, although he's looked very good through a couple of weeks. He may not be, certainly not quite the receiver that Danny Woodhead is, but he's the player who brings both of those things. So even though he's third in line coming into the season, he maybe is the person that you target or even have at the top of your watch list, you know, if you don't have enough roster spots, because he could actually move into both of those roles. And obviously it takes a very specific chain of events to have that happen as quickly as it's happened this year, where Woodhead is out, West is banged up. Allen looks tremendous in that dual role, but, you know, he's certainly a guy where already, you know, he's a running back too, I think, every week. This has been such a crazy beginning to the season. I was talking with some of my friends yesterday and looking at some of the different results from fantasy leagues, and people talking about how like the best team in the league lost this week because they started Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott. Like, if you lose because you started those two players, you had six running backs on your roster and the other four guys scored more points.
It's crazy.
Obviously, that's not going to happen every week. And that goes back to the question, too, with players like Kenny Britt. Well, you know, you're not going to sell Le'Veon Bell or Ezekiel Elliott because of a bad game. And so what we expect coming in plays a big role in terms of how we view those first couple of weeks. But yeah, it's been crazy. And already we've seen some of these guys emerge, like Chris Carson, like a Chris Thompson. Even those two guys are sort of, you know, probably at the opposite ends of what we're looking for, zero running back wise. Carson has been great. And I think that goes back to a little bit where the Seahawks were last year. I mean, I don't think Thomas Rawls failed because he suddenly wasn't a good running back. Obviously, he had some injury issues. And the NFL is so tough that you go down a little bit in terms of what your level is because of an injury. It completely changes who you are then as a player, and he may have dealt with a little bit of that. But he also dealt with the fact that they do not block at all. And so, you know, you're trying to deal with these defenders in the backfield. One of the things we saw a lot this offseason, people talking about Eddie Lacy breaking a lot of tackles, and that where he was going to the Seahawks was very similar to where Marshawn Lynch was going to the Seahawks. And I didn't really think that was the case, but I certainly was open to that interpretation, open to that possibility. But anytime you're playing with Aaron Rodgers and the defense is having to account for him spread out, you're getting into the secondary, you're breaking tackles sort of one at a time, or you're breaking tackles of defensive backs, that's going to be very difficult or very different than what you deal with the Seahawks, where you may have to break multiple tackles of big defensive linemen before you even get to the line of scrimmage. And I didn't think Lacy would be able to do that. Certainly he hasn't so far. That doesn't mean that if he gets healthier or if things change that he might not be able to do it in the future. But he certainly looks to be out of the equation. Rawls struggling with injuries. And then it comes back to ProSize, where it was really shocking that considering where they were in week one, that he doesn't even get a target, which he may still be injured or, you know, not quite 100% or just hasn't had enough practice within the scheme. But you look at Russell Wilson, you look at sort of a very different kind of situation with Cam Newton and his miss of Christian McCaffrey wide open in the end zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start to have some of these frustrations with the rushing quarterbacks who are very good overall quarterbacks. But if they're not going to be able to get the ball to their running backs for dump offs, then, you know, maybe you do have to adjust your expectations and adjust, you know, who you want to target on those teams. So if the Seahawks are not going to use ProSize in the passing game, then he has a much longer road to any sort of fantasy relevance. Is Carson a guy that you have sort of on your target list? Obviously, a lot of people picked him up last week. Did you have a waiver request in for him? How did you approach that with your first wave of free agent pickups?
It's been so muddled that I didn't target him in leagues where I had kind of limited roster spots. I do have him in a couple leagues where I just have a ton of like Scott Fishbowl. I have him there because it's more about carries, and I'm just like, I was looking for anyone who looked like they might get carries, and I picked him up, I think, even before the season. So I've targeted him a little bit, but he hasn't been a priority for me just because I think part of it is probably a little bit of a bias because I like ProSize a lot. Part of it is that I actually think, you know, I was pro Rawls over Lacy, so I was sort of like, part of me was probably like, who's this Carson guy coming in here, like thinking I knew how it was going to shake out. It was either going to be Rawls or ProSize that'd be the main beneficiary. But so I haven't really jumped on him, but obviously this past week he got a lot of work. I need to kind of rethink that backfield, although he's not really available in most of my leagues at this point. I think people generally scooped him up. Who's kind of some deeper targets for you? I wrote down some names here just to get your thoughts on them. Elijah McGuire is kind of interesting because he's been getting a little bit of work in the Jets' backfield. Powell and Forte haven't done much. The Jets are so bad that I could see them trying to work in McGuire just to see what they have, you know, in their new rookie there. Malcolm Brown is interesting as like just a kind of a handcuffy guy to Gurley, but if Gurley were to go down, I think Brown might have a big role. Tolbert's been getting about 20% of the snaps in Buffalo. You know, he's not that great of a player, but they really don't have much else there, so I could consider him having maybe a three-down role if McCoy were to go down. And then Chris Johnson basically had the same amount of snaps as Kerwin Williams this week. Also, Andre Ellington led the team in snaps running back this week, and you know, the Cardinals are looking pretty bad, so it's likely they're trailing, and maybe Ellington is really the target there after Kerwin Williams was you know, a big money free agent bidding dollar ad last week. So what do you think of those guys, and then anyone that I haven't mentioned?
I think that the tricky part, sort of as you alluded to, in those backfields is, number one, the overall production that you expect from the backfield is probably relatively low. Both the Cardinals and the Jets are struggling in general, and certainly struggling to run. The Cardinals, at least, do have some options in the passing game. They have that vertical passing game, and, you know, will occasionally hit on players or on plays with people like J.J. Nelson, Jerron Brown. The Jets, maybe not so much with any of it, although Jermaine Kearse has been certainly a surprise through a couple weeks, and maybe you even see a little bit of the reason why Seattle held him and continued to use him ahead of some of the trendier players for a while there before finally deciding to go in that direction. I think with the Jets, I still really like Forte. I always tell people that I'm wrong on so many things, and so I always try and set my rosters up to be successful, even if I'm mostly wrong. And I just didn't understand the Powell enthusiasm this offseason, and kept trying to trace it back, and it really didn't seem like it came from the team. It seemed like it came from fantasy writers, and that's not necessarily bad, because I think a lot of the very best work that's being done around football is being done by fantasy analysts. And so certainly I would take those opinions very highly and factor that into my thinking. But, you know, when you look at Forte, when you look at Powell, one of those players has a much stronger track record and, you know, played through injury last season. One of the things that we always kind of struggle with is that when someone is completely out, you know, we tend to forgive them what happened. On the other hand, when someone plays through injury, like, well, this person isn't as good now. Well, they're not as good when they're hurt, because when you play in the NFL at less than 100%, you just don't have those same abilities. It's such a high level. Forte, it seems to be relatively back. I mean, he's no longer a star, and certainly in this offense, he's not going to be a star. But, you know, I did like him there, especially at the price. I think in a three-way committee where just the committee in terms of the total numbers are not going to score a lot of points, that I would still stay away from, certainly stay away from something like buying low on Powell. And McGuire, I think even in slightly deeper leagues, is still a watch list kind of guy. If you're going to own and start a Cardinals player, I think at running back, I think that definitely you want Johnson over Williams. Andre Ellington doesn't look good, is struggling in that role, but again, it's the role that has value. So I would prefer to add or to try and trade for someone like Chris Thompson, although, you know, he's been so good through the first couple of weeks that maybe you even have a sell high opportunity there. Some deep players who are a little bit more in that vein, he didn't have a good week in week two, in part because their situation offensively is so tricky. But Tyler Irvin is someone who has some of those, you know, that passing down role. We look at Duke Johnson. Well, Tyler Irvin is pretty similar. And, you know, both of them are in offenses where if the running back is going to be deployed mostly as a receiver, you know, it's not great because their offenses aren't great. But I think there can be some optimism that Watson, even if he doesn't pass well, will be able to move the ball better than Savage did. And so maybe that opens up some things. Maybe Will Fuller coming back and you know, running some of those clear out routes will clear some things up for some players. And it, again, that's sort of a three running back situation with Miller, Foreman, and then you're talking about sort of a niche receiving guy. But if you're going to go for a niche receiving guy, then it's great to have him be someone who is almost certainly free. And Irvin is still kind of at that free level.
Yeah.
Are you rostering? Go ahead.
Yeah, Irvin's been, he was on our radar after last week because he, you know, was pretty involved. Going into the season, I wasn't really expecting him to be that involved. And it was kind of nice to see because I was a big fan of him coming out. I actually took him last year in our high stakes league. I think he was like our 17th round pick or something like that. And was hoping we would get a little bit out of him, which we did not. But yeah, he had 5 targets this past week, only 3 for 16, but he is involved, and he's played on 53% of the snaps this year. So, yeah, I like that one a lot. I think he could. Speaking of fast players, he's very fast and a dynamic player, and it could only take a couple plays before he's on everyone's radar. So I really like that as an under the radar pickup.
How about Tolbert? Is he someone you would be looking to add this week?
Yeah, so Tolbert, I actually have added in a number of leagues just because I don't know who else would be involved there if McCoy went down. He seems to really be like the only other running back they're using. So, you know, he's Mike Tolbert. Like, he's not going to set the world on fire. Buffalo looks better than, you know, people expected, better than I expected. Tolbert's had 27% of the snaps so far. Basically, no one else besides McCoy or Tolbert has been involved. They have Joe Banyard. I don't really know him. And then Tywan Jones, who's never really done anything. So I feel like just from a pure upside perspective, you know, if McCoy were missing a couple games, and of course McCoy struggled with some soft tissue hamstring injuries over the course of his career, then Tolbert could be in for a pretty big workload. What do you think about Tolbert?
The thing I like about Tolbert is that even though he's not going to touch the ball very often, there's the potential for very high value touches. So, you know, maybe you're not used between the 20s at all. And he's almost the exact opposite of someone like Amir Abdullah, for example, where, right, you know, he's not going to carry the ball. He's not going to rack up any sort of meaningful stats in terms of rushing yards. But if you catch 2 or 3 passes and then you score a goal line touchdown, well, you know, that's 10 points. And we've seen a lot of the top running backs struggle to get to that level. You know, mentioned Bell and Elliott, but, you know, someone who's even doing far worse like Jordan Howard. I mean, getting 10 points from your running back is something you can't scoff at. And certainly once the injuries start to kick in even more, which they unfortunately will do, and then you get to the bye weeks, being able to plug someone like Tolbert in who could get those cheap 10 points, that could be very valuable for you, especially if Tolbert lines up with some buys of other players you have where the Bills actually have a good matchup that week. Tolbert really wasn't an option this week with the fact that they just weren't going to score any points. But in those games where the Bills defense will really control and the opposing defense, you know, for their offense isn't as difficult as what we saw in week two, then, I mean, Tolbert is a great, you know, individual week fill-in.
Awesome. Anyone else that we should mention before we move on?
Well, I noticed that in a number of leagues, even very deep leagues, that one or the other of the backup Oakland Raiders running backs had been dropped. And you can understand why, because, you know, that backup role behind Marshawn Lynch, I think, is going to sort of widely vary week to week who gets the touches and then who makes the explosive plays. So, you know, if Washington gets a big play here, you know, takes a 20-yard touchdown reception, then, you know, the just the actual fantasy point numbers boost. And we can talk about touches, snaps, expected points, all you want. Just as human beings, the emotion always goes back there to, you know, what actually did happen. You know, has this guy scored a touchdown? Does he seem like the guy they want in the offense in those key moments? And even if that's not very predictive, you know, that's how people are going to play it. And so as you're looking for those Raiders running backs, you know, in many ways, they're not that playable because you don't know how the snaps are going to work out, how the touches are going to work out week to week. But certainly if there is an injury to any of those three guys, then I think the other two become much more valuable. And so if someone dropped one of the Raiders backups this last week, I'd definitely go to pick them up.
Awesome. All right, well, let's move on to our high stakes update here. Wanted to just kind of get a sense of where you are so far with your high stakes teams. You're much more high volume and much more successful high stakes player than I. You've been playing for a number of years and had a ton of success. This is my second year in high stakes. Much less successful. Peter Overzet and I co-own a team in the FFPC. We missed the playoffs last year by just a few points. We started 1-5 and then 1-5 straight. This year, we kind of liked the roller coaster element, so we decided to start 0-2. Hopefully, we rattle off some wins here eventually, but it's not been our year so far. So I'm hoping that your teams are doing a little bit better, and just kind of want to get an update from you on where you are with your high stakes portfolio.
Yeah, well, I hope that team comes around for you. I know you guys really battled back last year, and in the format that you're in, it just is such a great format there where, you know, you can stay in it down to the final week and battle for that last playoff spot, even if the team isn't utterly dominant. I've had a weird beginning. I had the number two pick in one of my drafts, and, you know, I sort of spent the week debating Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown because both of those guys bring different things to the table, and then who you take at that spot is going to have a big impact on how you structure the rest of your roster. And you know, I wrote about Le'Veon Bell, you know, for the Roto World Fantasy Labs book, you know, talked a little bit about certain areas where you might want to go away from zero running back. Because there are these incredible elite running backs who have, you know, such incredible numbers in terms of expected points, who are actually, you know, last year, David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell both had double digits in expected points as both runners and receivers. Well, I mean, those are just huge, huge numbers and probably not numbers you can get from a wide receiver, even the best wide receivers. But in the end, I still decided to go with Antonio Brown because the injury rate to running backs is so much higher, and because Brown has been so consistent. And then if you have that injury to Le'Veon Bell, then his numbers go back just absolutely through the roof, especially this year, I think, with potentially, even if you lose a few targets, if you don't have Bell sucking up those targets, but then you do have someone like Martavis Bryant drawing some coverage. I mean, it looked like Antonio Brown might be set for this gigantic season, was safe for all those things. Then what happened was this was a draft on Friday after the Thursday night game, and then the way these main events work is that if you draft Thursday players, you can choose to play them or not play them, knowing what they've done.
Well, where did Kareem? Oh, go ahead. That's where you headed.
Yeah, no, Kareem Hunt went number one.
Yep, he went number one in our draft too,
and he went number two in the draft I did later that day, and certainly that has not worked out poorly for any of the Kareem Hunt owners. Hunt looks amazing. You know, there,
and you avoided David Johnson by taking him 101. I mean, it's actually been a huge advantage for the guys who took him 101, which at the time I thought was an overreaction, but
exactly. It worked out perfectly in two different ways. And people were mocking this owner, you know, in the chat, which is somewhat unusual in the high stakes drafts. But, you know, I sort of chimed in with the point that the very highest scoring team I ever had in terms of regular season was one where I had selected Peyton Manning in the second round. And it was kind of weird because Peyton Manning in 2013, so this was the 2013 season where he had like the 50-point game in week one. And in most of the leagues, he was actually going then, you know, somewhere between 104 and 106. But in one of the leagues I did, he actually came back around to me at 202. And at that point, it seemed fairly straightforward to bank those huge numbers of points. And then that team ended up just destroying the league and led from week one and you know, was up 100 or more points, you know, basically from the very beginning, never trailed. And so, you know, I was like, I think that's not a bad choice. Well, it was especially not a bad choice because after I had spent the week, you know, debating for myself, Brown versus Bell, Kareem Hunt goes, and I pick David Johnson. So,
oh no.
In a very fluky development, that team is 2-0. So, if it can somehow get to the playoffs, the thing I keep telling myself is that if it can somehow get to the playoffs, and you're hoping that Bruce Arians, who seems, I mean, Bruce Arians is the best. He's hilarious. He's a really cool guy. He does seem to like to tell you things that are very clearly not true on certain players, which is always an interesting practice when you have folks out there who like to do that. I'm hoping that David Johnson is going to be back for week 13, 14, and not Christmas like Arians was suggesting.
Yeah, hopefully at least with Johnson, you may get some production if you can survive to the end, like you're saying. I want to get into kind of this this last segment here on snaps. Just I looked at each team and kind of pulled out one little kind of interesting nugget about their snap counts throughout the first 2 weeks. And kind of just want to go through them and see if what jumps out to us here, Sean. Before we do that, we're just going to take a quick break. Fantasy football fans, listen up. If you love fantasy football, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. Here's how it works. You do a draft that lasts for just 1 week, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you could join one right now. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. There's no salary caps, so you play in real-life snake drafts, just like you would with your friends in a season-long league. So come in, join me, draft against me on Draft Today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes or play right from your computer on playdraft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code RVRadio. That's right. Play a real money game for free just for using my promo code RVRadio on your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to playdraft.com and come play free with promo code RVRadio. All right, let's get into some snap facts, I guess you'd call them. One per each team here in the league. Starting with the AFC East, I'll just run through all four, and then we'll see what jumps out here. We've got Chris Hogan leads all Patriots wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs in snaps through 2 weeks. He's played on 132 of their 157 snaps. LeSean McCoy is just ninth among running backs in percentage of team snaps. He's played on just 72% of the Bills' 131 snaps. Jay Ajayi, meanwhile, played on 94% of Miami's snaps in their debut. That's currently the highest percentage for any running back in the league. And then Jermaine Kearse and Robbie Anderson both played at least 88% of the Jets' snaps. But the Jets have the second fewest offensive snaps per game. So anything jump out to you there, Sean?
Well, the running back snap numbers are pretty interesting in that I think you can look at it both ways where, and we'll see this with Kareem Hunt later, but when you have these workhorse running backs, if they get the ball on a high percentage of the snaps that they're in and then get a breather, I think that can be very good. On the other hand, you look at the situation with Miami. If you leave your main back out there and he has a three-down skill set, then you're always in a personnel grouping where you can attack in a wide variety of ways. And I think that'll help them. They looked very good with Jay Cutler. I'm a big Jarvis Landry fan, and so it was encouraging to see him targeted pretty relentlessly, which, you know, a lot of people don't like Landry, but those are high percentage plays. If he's catching those passes and turning them into 7, 8, 9, 10 yard gains, then, you know, those are better than, you know, running the ball into the line of scrimmage type of plays, which, you know, we hear all the time that you have to establish the run. Well, you know, why not just establish Jarvis Landry? You know, those are better plays. But yeah, I really like to see those numbers there. You hope that he will be able to hold up underneath that workload because obviously he's had some injuries in the past, but just any running back when you play that high percentage of the time is tricky. So then you look at, you know, who some of his backups are. You know, talk about some of the deep zero running back adds. Those Miami backups are guys where, you know, maybe they're even better targets, even though they're not playing at all, because Ajayi is playing so much that being able to survive that is going to be tricky.
Would you target Damian Williams there or Kenyon Drake?
I think Drake, even though Williams maybe is the better player or the more established player, if they would use Drake as a receiving back in the absence of Ajayi, then he could very quickly rack up the specific kind of usage that I think could make him, you know, a good running back three kind of player for your team. Whereas, you know, Williams would have to do a lot more things to generate the same number of points.
Interesting. All right, let's move to the AFC North. Mike Wallace leads all Baltimore wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends in snaps played, but he has just four targets on the season. Alex Erickson has outsnapped Tyler Boyd in Cincinnati, which begs the question, who is Alec Erickson? Duke Johnson has outsnapped Isaiah Crowell. He's played on 64% of Cleveland snaps compared to 61% for Crowell. And then Jesse James leads all Pittsburgh wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends in snaps played. He's played on 93% of Pittsburgh snaps.
Yeah, do you have a feel for the Bengals situation there? It certainly wasn't a surprise that they fired their offensive coordinator, and it was not a surprise when you hear that Marvin Lewis was facing a mutiny, because you were looking at a team there with the Bengals that had just problems sort of at every level. They had no offensive identity. They had really bizarre personnel groupings that they were shuffling in and out. They had no sort of overarching strategic approach to individual games or defenses, you know, through two games, which obviously is a small sample. But then, you know, at the tactical level or the play calling level, you know, why is Erickson getting the touch on the final play of the game or the target instead of, you know, even just throwing the ball up to AJ Green? So it'll be interesting to see there. We've written a lot of positive things about John Ross and Tyler Boyd. It would be great to see them emerge from that situation. But, you know, obviously last year people wanted to know where Laquon Treadwell was and why someone like Adam Thielen was playing. And it turned out that he was playing because he was good. And
yeah.
So there's the potential that that would be the case there. But I think it's more likely that this reorganization, you know, really lights a fire for the Bengals and helps them get back to where they were.
Yeah, so what do you think's going on with that offense and Dalton just being so ineffective? Do you think it's offensive line related? Do you think it was the offensive coordinator? Zampezi was the offensive coordinator last year and they weren't this bad.
Right, and different teams do different things well, and we see teams like the Saints, for example, really shuffle their personnel, although with as good as some of their individual players are, you could certainly raise the question of whether or not that personnel shuffling is actually hurting them. Certainly having people like Adrian Peterson who don't fit what they want to do at all, the necessity to get him in from time to time seems like it's really disrupting their offense. I would prefer to see the Bengals do a little bit more what you're seeing from the Dolphins, where you put your best players in the game and then you're able to run a wide variety of play types from that personnel and, you know, not putting guys in on each individual play that somewhat telegraph what the play is, what the objective is. Now, you can set up some tendencies and then thwart that tendency in a big moment to have some misdirect, but I mean, you have to have a little bit of success to start with before you start fooling people based on that kind of thing. And they're just shuffling people around to the extent that they don't have any continuity and you know, are not having positive plays. So they're never in a situation where they can then run something different off of that or surprise the defense. You have to have a basic level of success before you can start doing those secondary things.
It makes sense. Yeah. All right, let's move to the AFC South. DeAndre Hopkins currently leads all NFL wide receivers in snaps. He's got 145 snaps. It's tied for the overall lead among all wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs, which we'll touch on again in a few minutes. Jack Doyle currently leads all Colts wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends in snaps. He's played on 96% of the Colts snaps. Leonard Fournette has played on just 60% of Jacksonville snaps. That's 18th among running backs. And then from week one to week two, DeMarco Murray saw his snap percentage decline from 73% to 54%. Derrick Henry's rose, meanwhile, from 28% to 44%.
Yeah, Henry was one of our priority zero running back targets. He fell sort of right into that range where, you know, you'd be moving from having drafted five, six wide receivers, maybe five wide receivers and a tight end, into, you know, your first running back. And it's difficult when you're looking at that. And I'm going to draft my first running back and he's a clear backup. But, you know, anytime you're in a situation where a clear backup also has a very straightforward and easy to articulate path to being a top five running back, then that's why you would see him drafted there. There were a lot of articles about, you know, his value and his ADP being way off based on, you know, what his full season projection was. But I think that that helps understand, you know, why actually ADP does a decent job in terms of reflecting some of those different scenarios. You look at the situation with Murray, and you have to assume, at least in part, that that injury is still causing him problems, which was what their explanation was for the shift in snap percentage from week one to week two. On the other hand, I mean, he just looks exactly like he looked with the Eagles a couple of years ago, where he doesn't run forward with any explosiveness or cutting ability at all. So I was much more surprised that he had such a tremendous season last year than maybe what is happening this year. And I think you have to give him credit for that. You look at his past with the Cowboys, you look at his athletic numbers, you know, testing it before coming into the league, tremendous athlete. He doesn't look like that on the field, which, again, I think is one of those situations where, you know, it helps to remind yourself that just watching can be difficult to understand everything that's going on. But certainly when Murray doesn't look dynamic and then his results are very poor, you know, you question what's going on. But certainly making that transition to Henry, or you know, wanting to start him, consider starting him next week on teams where you have him, that very definitely comes into play, because that's a great offense for a running back to put up points.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's very exciting if you're a Henry owner there. In terms of Fournette, he's a guy I just want to touch on before we move on. Is he just strikes me as a screaming sell high candidate, given, you know, the fact that he's not playing on a ton of their snaps, just 60% of their snaps. Again, that's 18th among running backs. He's currently PPR running back 9. He's got 2 touchdowns. He's got, you know, 140 yards on the season, but that's a 26 attempt 100 yard game in week 1 with a touchdown. And then he had a 14 attempt 40 yard game this past week with another touchdown, which saved the day. He also had 2 receptions, 21 yards on 5 targets this week, and 3 receptions, 24 yards on 3 targets in week 1. So he has been involved in the passing game, which is nice to see, but he's not on the field quite as much as I'd like, given, I think, the value that you could probably get from right now. And of course, his primary value is on the ground. And Jacksonville, you know, after maybe looking like, ooh, maybe they're not so bad, you know, playing at Houston and kicking their butts, just got blown out by Tennessee at home. So, you know, same old Jacksonville, I think, moving forward. You know, does Fournette strike you as a sell high the way he strikes me as one?
I think so. It's an interesting situation, kind of like you mentioned with the touchdowns. And there are some reasons to believe that some of those touchdowns would continue. He looked, you know, so big and so fast compared to college players, but then there's such a big jump. And some of those guys, like, you know, perhaps an Eddie Lacy, a Mark Ingram, you know, a Trent Richardson, it's not that those guys weren't good prospects. And in some ways, the most interesting thing is that Richardson was actually easily the best prospect of those three players. But those guys no longer, you know, look, I mean, Eddie Lacy still looks big, but they don't have that big explosive look compared to NFL players, where, you know, Leonard Fournette, I mean, good night. He looks like a monster out there. The problem comes back into the structural situation that you mentioned, where, you know, you don't want your guy to carry, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 plays in a row. So they've been mixing in Chris Ivory. And one of the things that also jumps out is that Ivory, when he's not hurt, is spectacular.
Yeah.
And so you've got a backup who is very, very good. So they're mixing those guys, and that's great because you don't want Fournette to get a huge number of carries in this very tight window. But then the problem is that when you're blown out in the second half, he may not be someone you can get the total number of carries. So if they're mixing it up in the first half, and then they go away from the run in the second half, you potentially have some really large volume problems on your hands. Now, this game against Tennessee might end up being just as much of a non-representative game as the Houston game was. So, you know, hopefully for Fournette owners and for Jaguars fans, the reality will be at least somewhere in the middle, maybe closer to the Houston game. But anytime you have a high volume running back, or you have a running back where they need to be high volume and score touchdowns, and you have a questionable offense, and you can get a good price in a trade, I think you should do that. Because there are a lot of paths to his value cratering, whereas a lot of things have to stay the same or have to stay perfect for his value to stay where it is. And those types of running backs are always the ones I think you should sell if you can get sort of the name value for them. And he's looked good enough through 2 weeks that that name value along with that production, I think, probably does bring quite a bit in a trade still.
Yep. Yeah, my thoughts exactly. All right, let's move to the AFC West. Kareem Hunt has played on 64% of the Chiefs snaps. That's actually just 13th among running backs, despite his massive start to the season. CJ Anderson, meanwhile, is 5th among running backs in snaps. He's got 104 snaps so far. Melvin Gordon is 7th among running backs in snap percentage. He's played on 79% of the Chargers snaps, but the Chargers are averaging just the 5th fewest snaps per game, which is hurting Gordon's snap total. And then Michael Crabtree, as I mentioned, trails Amari Cooper by 26 snaps. 67% of the Raiders snaps is Crabtree's total, for 89% for Cooper. Cooper's played on 89% of the Raiders snaps compared to 67% for Crabtree. And Crabtree's actually been out-snapped by Seth Roberts as well as Cooper. So that was kind of the little nugget of optimism I mentioned earlier for Cooper. But I think these running back snap totals are interesting as well here.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt is probably the exact opposite of some of the other running backs we've talked about, where I doubt that his talent level is quite as high as it has looked through a couple weeks. Even on some of those big plays, you can see that he doesn't have the long speed of some other players.
He reminds me almost of like Zach Stacy a little bit, like the way he's kind of like, I don't know, just this, the motion of his leg, he's a little pigeon-toed or something. And you just see him, like, he's got initial burst and then it's just like he's tailing off. And he's been able to just avoid a couple guys trying to take him down, like, by his feet. He's been able to avoid those tackles and then just get past the last guy and get into the end zone a couple of these long runs. But I could see, you know, things like, if things break slightly, a couple of these really long runs are much shorter runs. And yeah, he does not seem to have the true breakaway speed that, you know, his 30 attempts for 229 rushing yards would indicate. Of course, he got 8 receptions for 126 yards through the air as well. So I'm not saying he's fluky, but it's surprising.
Right. But I think the flip side of that is the Chiefs offense, for as much criticism as they get and Alex Smith gets, and much of which is justified, is spectacular for a good running back. And Andy Reid, for as much criticism as he gets, again, much of it justified in terms of how he manages the clock and certain big games that he has probably lost because having a weakness in that area. He is a phenomenal coach and probably the second best coach in the NFL after Bill Belichick. And his offense and what it does for running backs, it puts them in positions to be successful. So you talked about Kareem Hunt and only playing 64% of the Chiefs snaps. And for most offenses, I think that would be a real concern because you're like, well, when Hunt is in the game, this is what they're going to do. When the backup is in the game, this is what they're going to do. You know, if Hunt is in there, we can try and figure out how to stop him. But it's just not like that. The Chiefs run so much misdirection and they do so many different things to keep the defenses from being able to key on, you know, who their personnel is and what the play is going to be, that even if Hunt isn't playing that super high percentage of snaps, which in many ways is great, helps keep you fresh, when he's in there, they've been able to use him and use him extremely effectively. And they use their running backs both in the run and the pass and then in the red zone. So purely from a scheme perspective, that, I mean, Hunt's situation is phenomenal. And I don't expect him to keep scoring like he has scored, but I mean, he's going to be a very good fantasy running back. And is he as talented as, you know, Brian Westbrook or LeSean McCoy, guys that Reed had in Philadelphia? I mean, clearly he's not as talented as Jamaal Charles, but he's perfect for the offense. So he doesn't necessarily need to be that talented to be a huge weapon for both them and for fantasy owners.
Yeah, agreed. In the NFC East, Jason Witten leads all tight ends in snaps with 145, and he's actually tied for the overall lead in wide receiver, running back, and tight end snaps with DeAndre Hopkins. Both of them have 145 snaps through two games. Evan Engram had 84% of the Giants snaps in week one. We don't have the snap data yet for the Monday Night Football game, but Engram had 7 targets and a touchdown in week two, so no fall off there. LeGarrette Blount was on the field for just 6 snaps in week two. And Terrell Pryor has outsnapped Jameson Crowder by 78% to 65% of the Washington snaps there. So what jumps out to you in the NFC East?
Well, Evan Engram has been exactly as advertised, and that's pretty exciting. Because of the strength of this rookie draft, you had some tight ends, including going all the way through to people like Gerald Everett, but you had tight ends who in any other year would have been extremely expensive. And in this year, they were falling in many situations to the 201, 202, 204 range. And so that was great value. I went ahead and took advantage of that to try and scoop up a lot of Engram. So seeing what they've been doing, especially within the context of the rest of their offense looking very, very poor, his play has been exciting. The Washington situation is interesting. Prior, you mentioned out-snapping Crowder. They definitely look like they're missing Garcon and Jackson, if not the specific players, but just the continuity. I'm still very much trying to figure out how they want to run that offense this year. Is that what you're also seeing with them?
Yeah. Prior's been interesting because he's been getting some deeper targets and looks to be clearly the number one guy there. But yeah, I mean, the offense has been struggling mightily so far, so I think the continuity probably plays a big role there. And also, Deshaun Jackson is just really good. I mean, he's always been one of the most underrated wide receivers in the league, I think. And in sort of a structural way, I guess, like adding Terrell Pryor while losing Deshaun Jackson, you know, you still have a deep threat wide receiver there. You should be fine. But I just think Jackson is a very underrated player, and that loss was probably underappreciated. And then, of course, Reed got banged up again this week, as we probably should have expected, but that can only be bad for the offense as well. In the NFC North, Ty Montgomery leads all running backs in snaps played. He's played 139 snaps this year. Josh Bellamy leads all Bears wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends. He led them in snaps in week two. Marvin Jones played on 96% of snaps in week one. Again, we don't have the snap data yet for Monday Night Football, but he led all wide receivers, all Detroit wide receivers in targets in that game with 5. And then Latavius Murray has played on just a total of 9 snaps in 2 games this year.
Yeah, so Ty Montgomery is again that situation where having your best running back on the field all the time, and especially if that running back has this elite sort of dual threat ability, you know, as a wide receiver transition player, but a big, thick guy who very much has a running back body, the things that he allows that offense to do is just very exciting. And so it's great to have him on the field. Certainly hope he doesn't get worn down by those snaps, even though the offense wasn't as effective in week two with all of those wide receiver injuries. Montgomery looks like a star, and you know, unless all of those wide receivers end up going out or they continue to have more wide receiver injuries, you know, that offense should do for fantasy owners what they were expecting at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it was interesting with Montgomery because, you know, he had a ton of snaps in week one. So you're going, okay, you know, he looks like a workhorse. And then it's continued. Week two, he had 86% of the snaps. Jamal Williams is a little bit involved in week two. He was on the field for 11 snaps. But, I mean, yeah, it appears that Montgomery, at least for now, he's the biggest workhorse in the NFL at running back. It's crazy. And so I don't, you know, I would definitely keep riding him. He does not strike me as a sell high. I would be holding on tight with Montgomery. Moving to the NFC South, Mohamed Sanu and Julio Jones have played the exact same number of snaps, 92. That's 82% of the Falcons snaps through two games. Devin Funchess leads all Panthers wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends in snaps with 76% of snaps played. Kelvin Benjamin, for comparison, has played on just 64% of snaps. O.J. Howard out-snapped Cameron Brate by 8 in the Bucs' debut. And Brandon Coleman is second among New Orleans skill players in snaps and leads Ted Ginn in snaps by over 10 per game.
Yeah, those Coleman numbers really jump out. The New Orleans offense is always sort of a share the wealth type of offense. And Ben Gretsch had an excellent article this offseason talking about Michael Thomas, and not that he was going to be a fantasy bust or anything to that extent, but just that his expected volume was almost certainly going to be lower than the projections for a lot of people. This idea that Brandon Cooks leaving was going to free up Thomas to be this elite, you know, potentially top five type of wide receiver because you take his efficiency with Breeze and then you add volume to it. That's certainly not an impossible scenario. It's not impossible that it works out that way the rest of the season. Certainly, I don't think Thomas owners are panicking or are upset necessarily with their selection, but that offense has a lot of mouths to feed. And so you look at Coleman being someone who wasn't expected to have a huge role. You have Snead coming back. You have Ginn there. You have Fleener, and then Alvin Kamara looking like an intriguing player. We haven't seen enough yet. He's made a couple of spectacular catches, you know, had a couple of drops, perhaps, you know, mixing him in with Ingram. But how the snaps and the targets break down with Coleman, Ginn, and Snead once Snead is back is going to be an important question for anyone trying to play any of those three guys or trying to get a value player out of it, you know, making trades. In today's Tuesday Morning Trades article by Devin, which is a great feature each week, I think, you know, he talked about it's never too early now to sell Snead with what we're seeing from Coleman. I don't think that's a bad idea. I own Snead in a number of dynasty leagues. I hope that he comes back and does well. Obviously, the Saints offense is going to be extremely efficient. Big picture, you know, they go through their big ups and downs on a game-by-game basis. But I think that's the one that's been the most interesting there and certainly is very fantasy relevant as it affects the rest of those players.
Definitely. All right, one last division here, the NFC West. Chris Johnson had one less snap than Kerwin Williams. Andre Ellington led all Cardinals running backs in snaps. He had 30 of the 66 snaps. This week, kind of covered that situation. Tyler Higbee leads all Rams skill players in snaps. Meanwhile, Todd Gurley is fifth among all running backs in snap percentage, but the Rams are averaging the fourth fewest plays per game. So kind of like Melvin Gordon, he's being held back by a small volume offense. Chris Carson leads all the Seahawks running backs in snaps. He has 43 more snaps than the second place running back, which is CJ Procise. And then Carlos Hyde is sixth in running back snap percentage, but the 49ers are averaging the fewest plays per game in the league. If Carlos Hyde had 80% of the 49ers snaps right now, if he was on the Packers getting that same share, he would have had an additional 41 snaps. So 20 per game more if he was on the Packers, which lead the league in snaps, offensive snaps through 2 weeks, compared to his current total with the 49ers, where they're the fewest snaps in the league. He's got 85 snaps currently. So what jumps out to you there?
Well, Gurley, I think, is someone who has had very good couple weeks to start. You probably can't buy him at a great price, but I think you should put feelers out to see if someone is looking to sell high on him. With a real offense there, he just looks like the star everyone was expecting. And then those snap numbers you talked about in a sort of a sneaky way, if they can develop the offense a little bit going forward. Now, they have a schedule that in some ways isn't set up the best to do this, but if they can develop the offense, all of these guys in this new scheme have been in it for a very short period of time. If the offense gets better, they bring in Sammy Watkins, improve his usage, his targets, then you're potentially looking at this massive breakout season. So not that you can necessarily buy him at a good price, but you at least want to test and see if people are looking to sell high on him. Carlos Hyde, the same kind of situation there. I don't know if you can necessarily buy him either, but those 49ers snaps, I think, are going to go up. They're going to get better within that Kyle Shanahan offense. So, you know, maybe you could look to buy a more peripheral player on that team, or a less exciting player like Garcon, with the idea that this offense is going to get better. They're going to play some teams that are not the Seahawks, and you could get value out of the snaps going up in the future.
Yeah, I totally agree with both of those. I think, last year with Gurley, you had Jeff Fisher just kind of constricting the offense, and we had a big sample size with him where we know that he likes to play slow, and he likes to run the ball, which is theoretically good for Gurley, but he likes to run the ball in part because he wants to control the clock and just shorten the game. That doesn't seem to be the MO for Kyle Shanahan. Famously not the MO in the Super Bowl last year. And then it doesn't seem to be the MO for Sean McVay as well, to just try to run the ball and run the clock. So through 2 weeks, I think I think it's more likely that those snap numbers for the entire offense are, less likely to hold up than the roles that we've seen for these two running backs. I think that Hyde and Gurley, just given what else is there on the roster, how they've looked through 2 weeks, I think they're probably likely to hold on to that kind of 80% of the snaps type of workload, rather than the offense being more likely to be so low volume going forward. But that will do it. Sean, thanks so much for coming on with me. Everyone, make sure to follow Sean on Twitter @FF_contrarian. Sean, looking forward to talking more football with you next week and for many weeks to come here.
Yeah, it should be great. Looking forward to the rest of this season. Hopefully our high stakes teams really get it going, and just for everybody, rooting for your players to not get injured this week and have a good time with it. We'll have a bunch of great guests this season, so tune in for them, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/radio.